Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome in, Hornets fans, on episode 94 of Buzz Beat. We're going to be breaking down the Bucks game from Saturday night, the potential 1-8 matchup with Milwaukee in the playoffs, as well as MJ's role with Mitch Kupchak compared to that of Rich Joe. And then Brian is going to give you some prospects to look for as we approach the NCAA tournament. Before we dive into the episode, just want to remind you all that we are a member of the Blue Wire Network, and you can visit the website at bluewirepods.com for more content. We'd also appreciate it if you can give us a rating and review on iTunes. It does go a long way. I'm going to put an arbitrary number out there, but if we can get to 75 reviews on iTunes, we will do a giveaway with some BuzzBeat gear. For this episode, I'm going to be joined by Brian and BG. I hope you're doing all right. First off, let the listeners know why you guys are in town, Sports Channel 8, why you're in town this week. Also, tell them what's taking place tonight, Monday night, as the Hornets take on the Rockets.
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of things going on here. So yeah, I'm in Charlotte now for the ACC tournament. I'll be here all week, Monday through Sunday, which is really exciting. I'm going to be doing all kinds of coverage for my day job at accsports.com. I'm going to be doing a little bit of play-by-play work, not play-by-play, but color commentary work for the Tuesday night game, which is going to be Georgia Tech, Boston College. That's going to be on the radio here on 99 The Fan in the Triangle. And, yeah, of course, there's going to be some good Sports Channel 8 stuff, too. We're going to be doing live Periscope shows after the games Thursday night and Friday night from the Carolina Ale House in Charlotte, right by Spectrum Center. And then Saturday, 10 to noon, we're going to be doing the normal Sports Channel 8, the radio show. Again, we're doing that live from the Carolina Ale House. It's going to be like a normal show, but, you know, with a heavy ACC tournament theme. And then Saturday night, that again, back later that day from 5:30 to 7:30, leading you into the ACC championship, we will be doing a pregame show that's going to be on The Buzz here in the Triangle. All again, that will be from, and that's 99.3 here in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. That again will be from the Carolina Ale House. Some other stuff, where are the Airbnb that Sports Channel 8 has rented for the week is going to be very close to a trolley stop in Charlotte. So we're going to be doing Periscope hits. We're going to be doing some trolley talk on the way into Spectrum Center, which should be fun. And yeah, look, the ACC tournament's a great event. There's going to be some really good players, you know, a lot of future NBA guys on display. And the semifinals are set up to be really, really fun Friday night. You know, good chance you see a Duke-UNC part three. You know, Zion Williamson going to play in that game. Plus Virginia, Virginia Tech or Virginia and Florida State would be another fun semifinal too. So, no, it's going to be a busy, busy week. I'm going to be low on sleep and, you know, indulging in probably a surplus of caffeine. But should be fun. And, of course, tonight – you can come meet the BuzzBeat crew. We'll be at Ed's Tavern at 2200 Park Road in Charlotte. Game tips at 8 p.m. I'm sure we'll be there a little bit before that.
Right.
Come meet the crew. You know, we can have a beer. Maybe I'll buy you a beer. And we can watch the Rockets take on the Hornets. I think some of the Sports Channel 8 guys might be there as well. So anyways, it's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, we can hang out before the ACC tournament gets started up. We can hang out, watch some Hornets ball. Richie, it's exciting because this will be the first time that the three of us, you, Spencer, and I have ever been able to hang out at the same time in person, as opposed to these Periscope, or pardon me, these Skype sessions here.
Exactly. We've all met individually on separate bases. Like, I've met you one time, you've met Spencer, I've met Spencer, but all three of us have never been in the same place at the same time. But that is taking place tonight at Ed's Tavern as the Hornets take on the Rockets. It sounds like your week is extremely busy. With you know, Sports Channel 8, ACC Sports, and then, you know, you're meeting us at Ed's Tavern. So that's going to be awesome to watch this game together. But it's interesting, guys. You know, listeners probably don't know this, but we've actually never met in person, all three of us. So that's come witness history. Come witness history.
Overdue. Yeah, so that's, again, 8 p.m., Ed's Tavern, Monday night, Hornets versus Rockets. Spencer will be buying you beers. I might buy you a beer. And come meet the BuzzBeat crew and perhaps some of the Sports Channel 8 guys as well, too.
So let's get into the game. The Hornets lost to the Bucks in Milwaukee, 114-131 on Saturday night, dropping the Hornets' overall record to 30-36. So attaining that 500 record by the end of the year is not going to happen. The Hornets built an early 14-point lead, kept it close with the Bucks until about the fourth quarter. The Bucks used Giannis and Lopez's inside scoring, and they combined for 51 points to propel them to this victory. And even with an off night from Middleton, the Hornets still lost, despite efforts from Walker, from Kaminsky, from Miles Bridges. And so the first thing that I wanted to note, Brian, there's a lot to get to in this game, good, some bad, is the Bucks defense, man. I think that gets overlooked with this team. You know, their offense, you think of their offense with their shooters that they have and Giannis, who's an MVP candidate. But on defense, man, they got tons of length, tons of athleticism. Mm-hmm. They clog up spaces real quickly. You think there's a lane and they clog it up with their length. They make it very difficult to get off open looks. And I thought a lot of times during this game, the Hornets would drive. They would think that they would have a shot or an open look. They leave their feet and then they have to change their mind mid-decision in air and make a pass across the court, and they turn the ball over. So, and especially in the first half, I noticed this too. I don't know if this was like a game plan in terms of trying to prevent this, but the Hornets used Batum a ton as the facilitator, and they moved Kemba off the ball. So I'm assuming they they're trying to avoid maybe Bledsoe disrupting the initiation of the offense with Kemba off ball. We saw that more in the first half than the second half. But what are your thoughts, Brian, on this Bucks defense? And does it get overlooked by kind of like how they've changed the game offensively?
I think if you're paying attention, you shouldn't overlook it. Like, they literally lead the league in defensive efficiency. Right. They lead the NBA in opponent effective shooting. They lead the league in defensive rebound rate. And they lead the league in free throw rate defensively. Like, this is an amazing defense, and I think it's getting better because, as you noted, we all know about the length, and Bledsoe is an amazing point of attack defender. He's been a total bulldog this year. Giannis, as a help side guy with his length, I mean, he just blows pick and rolls up. He gets in passing lanes. He's incredible. And they have all these long wings, Tony Snell, Chris Middleton, like all – they just don't have any real weak links defensively. Ilyasova is great at taking charges. Brook Lopez is a phenomenal shot blocker, and it's just like, despite his size, is so active. I thought he was I thought he was really good. Like, it's, look, there's some stuff they're going to give up by playing that predominantly that drop scheme that Budenholzer is known for. But man, I mean, if you're anywhere in the paint, like, he's going to contest your shot. He doesn't ever get knocked out of the play. You know, like, I think you could see it when we would watch Dwight Howard last year, similar defensive center, right? Drop center. But you could screen Dwight out of a play. You can't really do that with Lopez. Like, he's going to try to get back and contest the shot. And he did a nice job a couple times like that on some of these. I tweeted a couple of these plays out on Sunday where the Hornets tried to set like a double screen with him on the ball by using Kemba and then Devontae Graham to set like a second back screen. And either he didn't get screened, or if he got screened twice, he'd still get back to the hoop and contest the shot. And Kaminsky missed a layup, in part because Lopez, after getting picked twice, got back and tried to block the shot. And I think they're showing off some nice versatility, too. We saw this before they picked up Mirotić at the trade deadline, but DJ Wilson, the second-year pro, after basically not playing at all his rookie year out of Michigan, he's a wonderful defensive player. He can basically can't even get on the court. But you saw once they knocked Thonmaker out of the rotation, they basically started playing DJ Wilson and Ilya Sova as their backup fives or backup fours with Giannis as the five. And all of a sudden, they can get way more athletic. They can get switchy. You're seeing that with Mirotić now, too, where the Bucks went to Mirotić and Giannis as the 4-5 last night. And, yeah, the Hornets scored 1.2 points per possession in the 5 minutes with that crew out there. But the Bucks also scored 1.9 points per possession. And I believe with that pairing, the Bucks were plus 9 in 5 minutes. So, yeah, you're seeing – like, that's a look – it's not easy to do these things on the fly in the middle of the season, especially when they've been coached all season to drop. But as they're probably looking ahead to a potential finals matchup with Golden State, they know how important it will be to be able to switch when Golden State goes small and puts Durant and Draymond at the 4-5. Well, hey, they've got Mirotić and they have Giannis. And you could see them toying with this ability to switch more heavily. So that defense is already really, really good. And I think it's gaining another edge for the playoffs. And this team is freaking scary come postseason time, because they just got so many dudes. No one's really a weak link defensively. They're all long. They've got multiple shot blockers. And they're just buying in and playing really, really hard. It's a fun defense to watch. And yeah, if you are overlooking the defense, it's a little bit on your fault, but I would almost understand too, because offensively, like, that they've been all the rage this year with Giannis and how they're chucking threes and stuff like that.
It's crazy. I think, like, if you're paying attention, you shouldn't overlook this team. But I think that the initial thought when you think of the Bucks is Giannis driving and the shooters that are surrounded, and just, you know, Budenholzer just doing a great job of just kind of switching up the game plan with this Bucks team, because you normally didn't have these shooters around Giannis, and now they do. And so they're changing the game offensively and how tough it is to defend Giannis. And Marvin does his best, and I think he had a pretty solid game defending him. But again, there's just so many weapons that surround Giannis, and it's your pick your poison type of deal with this team.
With that drop scheme, only 30% of opponent field goal attempts have come at the rim. That's number one of the NBA this year against Milwaukee. And opponents are shooting under 57% on those, which is also number one in the NBA. A couple weeks ago, Zach Lowe was talking about this on his podcast. Like, the Bucks are giving up threes, right? Uh-huh, and in recent history, the one of the notions has sort of been, look, you can't build an elite defense if you give up threes, right? You just can't. That's the backbreaker. Well, there was already some sort of conflicting opinions with that inside of the NBA. This is what Lowe talked about on his podcast. And the Bucks seem to sort of be, like, proving that right now. That if you can give up some threes, if you're airtight at the rim, and if you are also still flying out and trying to contest these threes too, and still forcing teams into taking a lot of mid-range shots, which is what's also happening with the Bucks too. Like, the teams are still taking their, I think, number 4 or 5 and frequency in terms of volume of mid-range attempts against them. So they're still forcing teams into these shots that are not mathematically great for them too. This is just, it's just really impressive. But they've locked down the rim with Lopez and Giannis.
So I want to switch it to the defense on the Hornets end. They're on the opposite end of the spectrum here. They on the other hand, got to do a lot of things right to stay in the game defensively. So there's two things I kind of want to note. First, defensively, Lamb this year. I thought he has, and I made a note of this on Twitter, I think he's regressed. And I know that's kind of weird to say about Lamb, who's not known as a defender. I think he has regressed this year as a defender. I did post two highlights on Twitter with Lamb's closeouts. And Spencer thinks otherwise. He thinks it's a coach instruction to kind of run these shooters off the line and force that backside help, which could very well be the case. I don't think we know for sure. But my thing is that this has happened so often with Lamb, you don't know if it's actual coach instruction or if it's him just not being able to close out properly. Yeah. And one thing I can't understand, if that is coach instruction, if that is James Borrego saying, hey, let's run these shooters off the line, I don't understand why putting yourself in scramble mode against the Bucks is a good thing. Like, that's, that to me is a bad thing. Like, I, you want to close out the shooters. You want to try to get them off the line, but you still got to try to stay in front of them. Like it's not just one of those things where, hey, you go by me, so you're not taking a three, but mm-hmm. you put everyone else in scramble mode. And I think that's the biggest thing with this Bucks team is they work outside in. Yes, they take a ton of threes, but they're able to take a lot of threes is because you have Giannis who's closing in and collapsing the defense and putting teams in scramble mode, and then the passes go outside to loosen up the defense a little bit. But the second thing defensively, Frank Kaminsky had a great game, especially from deep, but in the third quarter, without Giannis, they had Lopez on the court, and they kept feeding him in the post in third quarter. Brooke was only 1-for-5 from behind the arc, but he didn't miss in the paint this game, and so Frank playing the five up against Lopez, it was a mismatch. So those two players right there clearly have shown the inability to defend.
Yeah, I tweeted this at you before we hopped on this morning, but it was like I was laughing. I made a note of it last night in the third quarter. The Bucks ran one of these little decoy plays where they faked like they were setting up post up action for Middleton on the near block, and weak side they were having Lopez set a pin down for Mirotić, and so it was like a sort of a dummy action to get Mirotić a wide open catch and shoot three. And he was bombing last night, by the way, too. That dude is awesome. I know he hasn't hit great since he got to Milwaukee, but last night you're seeing what he's going to become for them. And it was Lopez who was being guarded by Kaminsky, screened on Lamb, who was covering Mirotić, and it was just every bad bench defensive lineup that the Hornets had over the last two seasons with those two guys when Clifford was coaching the team. It was just I was having like PTSD level flashbacks to just that has always been a recipe for success. If those two guys are off the ball on the weak side, have one of those guys, you know, if Kaminsky's guarding one guy, have that dude screen for the guy that Lamb is guarding, or the inverse uh-huh. works too. And that uh-huh. will always, someone is always going to be open for a dunker at three. We've literally talked about, you can go back to podcasts from like 13 months ago and you can find us, you know, yelling about this. You know, it should be noted Lamb has been dealing with a hamstring injury, left hamstring, and that was reportedly as of Saturday afternoon was sore. He played through that last night, which was good to see. His defensive RPM numbers this year a little bit below average, in the negative, not by a ton, but that's one of those things. Like if you watch him, you know he's not a stopper, and he's spacey off the ball, and those closeouts have been an issue. He's right. long. Occasionally he can get in and block a shot or steal a pass or whatever. For the most part, he's just not. He is just a below average.
He just looks like
defender.
A player that would be a better defender. You know what I mean? Like if you just look at him.
Yeah. No. I know. And I thought offensively he did some nice things last night playing out of the corner. That worked a couple, like probably four or five times for the Hornets. But Charlotte down to 21st in defensive efficiency now, which is basically where they've been for a couple weeks. Over 112 points per 100 possessions. They're hanging out with some bad company down there in the bottom third of the NBA. And they just can't. It's just too low. It's too much. But they don't have enough stoppers on the wing. Zeller is a very good I just really think this team only has two plus defenders, and that's Zeller and MKG. And even then, MKG's defense has probably regressed a little bit the last year or so. Cody's very good, right? Like he's a very good defensive center. Frank Kaminsky's a bad defensive center, and you sort of got to if he can score like he was last night, like he has in the last couple of games, you live with that. Like that is the future for Frank Kaminsky, right? As a guy that comes off the bench, plays 20, 25 minutes at the five. You know, this is like the optimistic expectation. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he can quite produce this every night over the course of an 82-game season. But even then, you still got to live with the defensive limitations that come with Kaminsky. And then, you know, you're playing guys like Miles Bridges a lot. And we all like Bridges. We think he has some defensive upside, but he checks in and out defensively.
Especially off ball.
I think Kemba absolutely off ball. And I think Kemba, it's not fair to really judge him and critique him too much for his defense because he's asked to do so much offensively and in terms of how many minutes he's asked to play too. But yeah, his defense hasn't been very good this year. And you're just counting, you're relying so much on Nick Batum defensively, and you're relying on I guess Marvin has been okay defensively this year too, but it's just not enough. It's a lot of pieces that don't fit together, and you know, you can try the switching scheme, but you're also going to get banged on the offensive on the glass, which once again last night they were too.
So let's kind of wrap this up by maybe adding a positive from this game, because I felt like we're a little bit negative. I mean, I thought the Hornets stayed with the Bucks. You know, all things considering, this was the best team in the NBA. They're a very good home team. I think they're the best home team in the NBA. We were up 14 at one point. So I think there are some positives to point at. I think that one player that I do want to talk about real quickly, I thought Miles Bridges had an underrated game. I think, you know, for having 15.6 rebounds, in 26 minutes of play, I still thought it was kind of overlooked. He continues to show life, kind of, you know, beating people off the dribble, off closeouts, finishing with both hands around the rim, even in traffic. And he also had a putback dunk over Giannis, which was nice to see. So, what are your thoughts quickly on Bridges, maybe in this game, or just kind of how he's progressed throughout the season? I know that he's definitely had his downs this season, but you know, he's shown some life.
He plays hard every game, right? That's the bare minimum you could ask for. And in terms of production, maybe that's been a little bit more of a roller coaster, but he plays hard every night. He tries every night. He's not just playing hard. He's like trying to learn the game as it's going too. And you can see him. You can see certain stuff clicking into place for him, which has been fun. And the guy's got skills. He's not just a leaper. It's been really entertaining to see him get to that right hand on drives. Basically anything 15 feet, 10 feet and in, he can finish with that right hand. In fact, sometimes it looks like he's more comfortable finishing with that hand. But he had a great game last night. 15 points on 9 shots, hit a 3. 2 offensive rebounds, including the 1 putback spike over Giannis. Like, that's not a lot of guys can do that. Plus, he had 2 assists. Hornets only -2 with him on the court. They got off to a good start. Like, the best lineups they had in the first half last night were the starters, right? And then when Bridges played with the bench. And, Bridges with 2 minutes where it was the bench 4. So, Devontae, Frank, Bacon.
Lamb was out there.
Miles Bridges. Lamb as well, too. Yeah, they scored 2.33 points per possession in the first half, 1.7 points per possession for the game. They finished with a little bit of a negative net rating for the game, but that's pretty good production from the bench against the Bucks in Milwaukee, especially with how they stagger lineups. So sometimes you're going to end up having your bench group against Giannis. You know, they sub him out at the 6
He's
minute
like
mark
bookended
of
on
the first
the quarters.
Quarter. Yeah, I know. They've been doing it all season. It works for them. You see the Rockets do this with Chris Paul, where they just want him. They always want Chris in at the end of the quarter because he's the master of the 2-for-1. And I'll say this too. I find it a little fascinating how Houston, especially like last year's Houston team, but now we're starting to see it with the Rockets again this year with the Bucks team. Stylistically, they're so different. You know, Houston is all spread pick and roll, 3-point step backs, ISO, and the Bucks don't do that, but they're still targeting the same areas, right? Like last night, 90% of the Bucks' field goals were at the rim or they were threes. They took only 9 mid-range shots. They only made 2 of them, and it was only 1 mid-range shot for most of the game that they had hit. And I just think it's interesting. Like they are targeting the money areas on the court, but at the same time, they're just doing it in a different fashion than the way Houston does, which to me is really impressive. And one last thing I want to sneak in here about Kemba. He continues to have some really good shooting performances when he gets to go against the Bucks drop coverage. So I looked at this Kemba versus the Bucks this season with Brook Lopez on the court in 88 minutes, over 57% effective shooting, 49% shooting from the field, 41% shooting on threes. In the minutes with Brook Lopez off, still shooting high, 40% on threes, but effective shooting drops from 57% down to 44%. So I think that's why you saw at the end of the first half, even before Milwaukee subbed Mirotić in for Lopez and went small, they were fearless putting Eric Bledsoe on Frank Kaminsky in the post, and they switched Lopez on to Kemba just to say, hey, you can take this guy off the dribble, but at least you're not going to be able to sprint into a floater, you know, or you're not going to be able to walk into a 3-pointer, which is some of the good action that he got. He was 5 of 7 shooting in the first quarter, and that was the variety of scoring he was getting. So I thought that was a neat little wrinkle, and that also sort of does show you the limitations of Kaminsky as well, which is the Bucks can feel comfortable putting a 6 foot. I know Bledsoe's built like a tank. Like, they can feel very safe putting a guy like him on Kaminsky too.
There was one play, I can't remember, it might have been the second quarter, where Kemba did have Brook Lopez out on the perimeter, and both Batum and Kaminsky were like, you know, hey, give Kaminsky the ball in the post. Immediately, yep, when he touches it, Bledsoe steals it. It might have been a foul, but still, the toughness that Kaminsky lacks is clearly shown on that play. So
you and I are thinking about the exact same play, by the way. Yep. Like the literally the exact same play.
And I was thinking about that, and then like seconds later, Del Curry's like, "Yeah, Kemba, you probably should have taken Lopez one on one. That would have been the better."
Probably. It's just, it's funny. It's like you can, like, that is obvious. Kemba versus Lopez is the more exploitable matchup. It is a little funny. It goes to show you, A, the limitations of Frank, but also just, like, where we are in basketball now, where it's like, yeah, you'd rather have your six-foot guy going against their seven-foot guy 20 feet from the basket than you would have your seven-foot guy going against their six-foot guy, you know, 10 feet and in from the basket. And I would also like to say one last note, too. Again, we all agree Kaminsky had a good game, but the Bucks, when they ran away from the Hornets in this game, it was in that third quarter, they played straight bully ball. Giannis 1-2 on post-ups, Lopez 3-3 on post-ups, and all three of those post-up makes were right-handed hook shots over Frank Kaminsky. So, I mean, that just, it is what it is.
So we're going to wrap up, and on the other side of the break, we're actually going to talk quickly about how we think we would fare against the Bucks if we did sneak into the playoffs. But let's take a quick break real quick to give you guys a little bit of announcement. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure you guys are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set. This value trial set includes a 5-blade razor, shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all of that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and over-designed. Harry's has bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you guys go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3. All right, Brian, tell them about how they can get in with this NCAA tournament with MyBookie.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, you guys, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed last year? I'm sure Spencer hopes so. And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you can watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with the promo code BLUEWIRE for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
Very nice. Well, let's transition real quickly, like 2 minutes max. I want to talk about if the Hornets did make the playoffs, they snuck in somehow. Clearly, they'd be going up against this Bucks team. I think they've played them well this season. A lot of the games have been close, despite the head-to-head record. I think it's, what is it, 1-3, 1-2?
1-3. They've all been close, you know, mostly close games. But yeah, 1-3 with the one win coming in Charlotte.
And at points, you know, in these games, Charlotte's have had double-digit leads. So my question to you, how do you think the Hornets would fare against this Bucks team in the playoffs? Do you think that they would win a game? Do you think they could force six games? Or do you think it's just going to be a sweep, BG?
Yeah, I think I would bet sweep. I think the Hornets have the possibility if they're at full health, and they certainly missed Tony Parker Saturday night. Parker, in the one win against the Bucks this year, Parker was huge, right? And I think what's the Hornets' record down games without Tony Parker this year? It's like 1-12 or something. Like, they've really struggled without Tony Parker. But that's any guy when they're absent of anyone in their top 7, 8, 9 rotation. They just don't have the margin for error. Against the Bucks this year, 192 minutes, Hornets have scored 105.3 points per 100 possessions. They've allowed 111 points per 100 possessions, a net rating of -5.5. Obviously, they've been a little bit better at home than they have on the road. In the two games in Milwaukee, they've allowed well over 114 points per 100 possessions and have a -12 net rating. And that's made a little bit uglier by what they did last night, where Milwaukee really stomped on them, especially in the second half. Look, it'd be one of those things where Kemba, he, with his ability to shoot and to hit pull-up shots, both from three and from, in the mid-range area, and with Lamb's ability to do that too, and with Parker's ability to knife into the paint and hit from the mid-range or get all the way to the rim. Like, you could see them having one game where Kemba and one of those other guys just gets irrationally hot. You know, likely would be game 3 or 4 in Charlotte probably. But even then, I mean, just Milwaukee's got answers for everything. Like, the Hornets had a big double-digit lead last night. They didn't in the game, even in the game they won, they had built a huge lead, and Milwaukee came racing back too. Like, the Bucks are just deeper. They've got better players. They're on a mission too. I think this team is just locked in and truly believes they can win the championship. And if that's the case, like, dude, you don't have time to waste with the Hornets in the first round. You just blow those guys out and you move them out of the way. And should mention too, 538 has the Hornets down to a 15% chance of making the playoffs. The Hornets are projected to finish 36-46, which would be very interesting for the people out in Vegas. I believe the over-under win total this year was set at 36.5. But yeah, no, I don't think the Hornets match up really well. They don't have anyone to guard. But it also hurt not having Michael Kidd-Gilchrist last night. Yeah. He's probably the best option they have against Giannis. You know, Marvin can try, Bridges can try, but they just don't really have the they're just not there to be able to do it. Either right. They're limited physically, or they're just too young and green to be able to do it. MKG is sort of the best of blending those two. And he's done well at times against Giannis this year too, on some possessions that I can think of in my head. So having the full complement of players would help, but I just don't see it. The math is so tilted in Milwaukee's favor in terms of how they score and how, in terms of how this is the number two offense with maybe the MVP or the runner up for MVP on the roster and the number one defense.
Yeah.
And they can go 10, 11 deep. They're bigger. They shoot better. They defend better. There is nothing that the Hornets do that is on the surface better than the Bucks, other than maybe avoid turnovers and shoot pull-up threes. So, yeah, again, it goes back to my initial point. Kemba would just have to have one game where he went crazy and scored, 35, 40-plus points and did so efficiently.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's hard to see it again.
Right. Like you said, it would have to happen in game 3 or game 4, but you made a mention of this in just terms of, like, how they're on a mission. I think they would just kick it into another gear come playoff time. A lot of these games that have been close in the regular season, you got to put that, into perspective. It is the regular season, and this Bucks team is a good home team, so winning on their court ain't going to happen. But they're also a good road team, 23-11 on the road. So picking up game 3 or 4 would still be a tough challenge, regardless of how we played them this year. I differ a little bit. I think Marvin's the better matchup for Giannis than MKG, but it's just slightly. I know that he's a little bit older, but that's just a personal preference. But if we did make the playoff, my unconventional strategy, and I don't know if it's unconventional, would not be MKG or Marvin guarding Giannis. It would be more using more zones against Milwaukee. I think that people think of zones, kind of using a zone against a team that can shoot the ball or isn't afraid to shoot the ball seems probably unwise or unconventional. But I think the drive and kick game by the Bucks, the inside-out game, is really their biggest strength. So if you stay disciplined and you don't collapse and you're not having to scramble as much, I personally think that strategy would work a little bit better than people think it would. I think you'd be better off playing the 2-3 zone if you could stay disciplined and not collapse as much and scramble as much. And just don't allow Giannis to beat you in the middle. I think that's kind of what opens a lot of things up with the Bucks. So I was going to hold off on that strategy if we made the playoffs. But like you said, the percentages are looking less and less likely that the Hornets actually do make the playoffs. And I would agree with those percentages. So let's transition to the Zach Lowe podcast real quickly. We've talked about this before, but he had Kevin Arnovitz on his podcast not too long ago, mainly to discuss Kevin's piece on the Suns front office. But Lowe also brings up another team, an unnamed team. He did not want to name this team, but went on to describe this situation and how the owner had his hand in too many decisions and that the GM didn't have that presence, didn't have that power to speak up or change his mind. And I think most people can agree that he was hinting at the Charlotte Hornets and MJ's role within some of these transactions. So I know we've discussed this before, but my question to you, Brian, is I know that we don't have all the information, all the info about this situation, but is the blame on MJ for a lot of these bad decisions, or does some of the blame need to be on the people in the room as well for not speaking up?
Yeah, I mean, that part of
both.
One of the things, yeah, I mean, it's a combination of things. And I mean, ultimately, it's sort of tough to even think about assigning blame because it's an organizational struggle, you know? And Arnovitz even mentioned this where he was talking, conversation he had with the late agent Dan Fagan, where he was saying, look, part of a GM's job is to be able to convey his message to the ownership. And, you know, for whatever reason, that just wasn't able to happen during the Rich Joe time in Charlotte. So, but it's a lot of things. It seems like there were too many voices in the room, and I don't know, I can guess and I can assume who that responsibility falls on. But it is sort of, there are other people out there that can point fingers and stuff like that too. And I'd probably agree with some of that stuff. Who can you suss out and assess blame to? Probably a lot of people. Ultimately though, you know, it comes down to one person making the final decision. That's MJ, right?
Right.
And again, in a lot of these reports, he is the one that is sort of seen to be the obstructionist here. And with the guy that's packing the room with a lot of extra voices, unnecessarily so. If that's the case, then yeah, he deserves, like, he is worthy of taking on the lion's share of blame here.
Yeah, he's definitely the common denominator here. And I think a lot of the decisions that have gone wrong, especially in the drafting department, somehow his name is tied to. And for a team like Charlotte, who's a small market, they have got to be able to hit their draft picks. I think, you know, in the free agency market, it's going to be tough to draw big names or players of real impact in the free agency market. But when it comes to drafting, that's where Charlotte has had its worst luck. And you hit it, you know, the nail on the head. MJ seems to be the one that's always, his name is always in there with the mess ups that occur. And I do think, you know, I would say it's probably hard to speak up against MJ, like his presence.
He's the greatest player of all time. Right. And he's a billionaire now. Like, what are you going to say to him?
Right. So I get it. But now that we have Mitch Kupchak, I'm hoping that his presence might be a little bit bigger than Rich Cho. Nothing against Rich Cho at all. Cho did make some savvy trades. But when it came to drafting, clearly the voices that needed to speak up didn't. And that's why we're at where we're at right now.
Cho's a good GM, and I think he has upside. As I hope that guy gets another shot to at least be an assistant GM if he wants it, right?
Yeah.
And then if that goes well, then maybe he'll get a chance to run another team. He's just, the guy's been in the NBA for a long time. He's a super smart, patient, good, like, just reasonable human being with a keen eye for the majority of aspects that go into being an above average GM. And so, yeah, I think that guy should get another shot. I hope he does, perhaps with an ownership that's a little more laissez-faire.
Yeah. So Brian, let's wrap this up with some draft prospect talk. I know we'll have plenty of time to talk about this, especially when the Hornets are looking like they're not going to make the playoffs. But First off, I was kind of talking to you this before we started recording. I hate the fact that Draft Express is no longer. That's where I got all my information. I've actually watched less college basketball this year than I did last year. And last year, I didn't watch a lot. So that's saying something, Brian. But you, on the other hand, you work for accsports.com. That is your day job. So you do keep up with prospects more than most. And especially in the ACC tournament, which is happening this week. I'm going to ask you two questions. They're basically the same question, but two prospects to look out for. First one, someone maybe who's overlooked, someone who doesn't get all the spotlight, but might actually make a bigger name for himself as more eyes are on him in this ACC tournament, or maybe even just the NCAA tournament in general. And then maybe a second player who may not be a bad prospect by any means, but just is a tad overrated. And maybe his stock might drop as eyes get on him a little bit more. So go ahead.
First category here, I think at this point maybe he's not totally under the radar because everyone has seen Ty Jerome play at this point. But I think people need to sort of understand that this guy is, if he's not a first-round prospect, he's approaching it. And he could come out and be, you know, the 28th pick, the 25th pick, or, you know, maybe even a little bit earlier than that in the draft this year. This guy is a 6'5 point guard. He's not super long, but he's still pretty big. He has the ability to be explosive, even though he really doesn't play above the rim. He can still get by you, although usually he'll need some sort of advantage created for him to do that. I think there's a chance he could struggle with NBA level closeout defenders, but he does have this floater zone that he can get to, and I've sort of written about that. He shoots a high percentage on floaters, and it's one of those things he doesn't need to get by a guy to sort of score on the drive. Like if he can at least get an angle on a guy, he can in that 8 feet, 9 feet, 10 foot radius, he can use the glass and he can be a very effective driver of the basketball, even if he can't get it all the way to the rim. I don't know if he's a one in the NBA, but at this point, it almost doesn't matter. Like I think he can be sort of what another Virginia guy, what Malcolm Brogdon is for for the Bucks. And look, you know, I don't think Jerome's going to be the finisher at the rim that Brogdon is, where he's a total bulldog. But the guy that can play off, you know, can be a secondary creator. And your primary guy doesn't need to be a one in the NBA now anyways. Like the Bucks, their primary creator is Giannis, right?
Right.
Like it doesn't have to be the point guard every time. You just need other guys that have skill and can score from everywhere else on the court. Jerome absolutely can do that. The guy is one of the best shooters from range in all of college basketball. Half court catch and shoots this season, 74% effective shooting, 1.48 points per possession. That's in the 98th percentile nationally. If you filter in terms of volume, he might be number one in the nation. I just like this guy's game. I think he's a high floor, maybe a little bit lower ceiling, but a high floor player that you put him on the court and your offense is going to get better because he can pass, shoot, and drive. Like he's exactly what you want in the modern NBA. So now for this one's a little bit tougher to sort of come up with, but the prospect that I think is I think at this point everyone's sort of on board with this guy being perhaps a little overrated, but I think you can make a case for someone like Cam Reddish or Nasir Little with Duke and UNC respectively. I think Reddish is still a top five, top six pick, even though his shooting and his drive game have been subpar this year, and he's turned the ball over too much. And Nasir Little, he just, you know, the basketball IQ isn't all the way there, and he even had some slip ups against missing wide open shooters and dribbling into turnovers against Duke yesterday. But I'm going to go a little bit further off the map with Tyus Battle, who's a wing at Syracuse. Battle's a guy that could have come out last year and decided to come back for his junior season. He's a big wing. He's a high usage guy, plays a ton of minutes, plays in an offense that really lacks a ton of creativity. So I don't think he shoulders all the blame for an offensive profile that is really, really lacking. But basically, like, this guy is the king of the long twos. That's all this guy does. He has taken 189 two-point attempts outside of the rim this year. He shot under 38% on those, and only 14% of his 71 makes have been assisted on. Like, he loves dribbling into contested long twos, and it's it's frustrating to watch him sometimes because he'll just dribble and he'll dribble into and put his right or left shoe on the line and you know, take a contested long two. You know, Syracuse is an NCAA tournament team, and perhaps with a run in the ACC tournament and with a run in March, maybe Syracuse gets to the Sweet 16 again. And if he shows off that creative offensive game, you know, maybe he can get from being a top 40, top 50 prospect to a little bit higher than that. But it just none of that sort of like frivolous shot creation matters much to me. I think this guy needs to focus in on being a spot up player, a catch and shoot guy. And I think if he does decide to come out for the draft this year after his junior season, that's something to really watch in the pre-draft process, because his isolation dribble drive game, like, just no one, it's just not going to ever be a, like, there are no role players in the NBA, right, where that's their thing, or at least they aren't good winning role players. So I think he's a guy that's sort of seen his stock fall a little bit over the last couple of years. And yeah, we'll see what he does in March.
Well, always good stuff, Brian. You know your stuff when it comes to ACC sports. And like you said, he is going to be doing some color commentary Tuesday night.
Yeah, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. I will be doing the Boston College Pittsburgh game, which will be great. I'll get to see two other sort of like fringy draft prospects, guys that are in the top 35, top 40, top 50 prospects, and Kai Bowman from Boston College and Xavier Johnson, the freshman point guard from Pittsburgh. So that'll be fun. But yeah, Tuesday night, and maybe even the night game, one of the night games on Wednesday
nice.
Too.
Well, very nice. Well, guys, thanks again for tuning into episode 94. Please come visit us at Ed's Tavern tonight if you're in the area, versus the Rockets. We can watch the game together, have a beer. I have some stickers to give away, and you guys get to meet the host of the podcast in person. So for Brian, I am Richie. We'll see you guys next time.